Matter of JA, can we please have appearances of counsel?
James Greenhorn representing JA, Your Honor.
Your Honors, I can go back to the public defender on behalf of the Office of Public Defenderation.
Representing a meeting theory ID, ACLU of New Jersey, and
welcome, counsel. Mr. Maynard, I'd like to get through your argument and then probably take a break.
Thank you, Your Honor. First, I have submitted my request for an opening statement, as Your Honor requested me to do in the future. And so I would like to make an opening statement.
Jump right in.
I also would like to reserve time for rebuttal, if I might.
That's fine.
Thank you. The imposition of Megan's Law on juveniles is constitutional only to the extent that a juvenile registrant poses an ongoing risk of harm to the public. Once a registrant can prove that they no longer are dangerous to anyone else, Megan's Law may not be applied any longer. State X rel CK at page 76. The jurisprudential framework of CK must be used here as well. Under that framework, courts should first consider the most up-to-date scientific evidence, then conduct the Greenberg balancing test to determine if there is an adequate public need for the infringements. Then the court must apply the controlling holdings from CK to determine whether the subsection F time bars are constitutional. Note that the same process is required to assess the constitutionality of either the 15-year time bar or the lifetime bar. Because neither of the time bars of subsection F are necessary to ensure public safety, they both fail the third prong of the Greenberg test and must be found unconstitutional. The time bars of Megan's Law are an artifact of history, established before science provided a better approach. Time bars were created because in 1994, it was assumed that sex offenders had a high rate of recidivism. Now we know they do not. It was assumed that sex offenders' recidivism risk remained high over their lifetime. Now we know that risk declines rapidly. There was very little data about the actual rate of recidivism. Now we have extensive data on recidivism. And there were no reliable tools for assessing risk. Now we have accurate risk assessment tools that are scientifically validated, like the static 99R. The time bars of Megan's Law were meant to be a proxy for risk because they had nothing better to work with at that time. But the inescapable fact found by CK was that automatic time bars constitute irrebuttable presumptions of dangerousness, and we now know these presumptions are not true. Risk declines quickly over time, especially for juveniles. In fact, after only 3 years living offense-free in the community, juveniles adjudicated delinquent for a sexual offense will be no more dangerous than anyone else in the community. The scientific evidence available in JA provides further evidence of the unconstitutionality of Megan's Law time bars beyond what was presented to the courts in CK. CK was decided in 2018, but the evidentiary record in CK was created in 2013 from studies even older than that. So over a decade of additional research and data beyond what was available to the CK court is before this court. A groundbreaking new finding available to this court is that the rate of sexual offending of the general population has been discovered to be 2%. What scientists call the desistance threshold. This is critical to the case at bar, given that the provisions of Megan's Law are all based on relative risk of sexual offending. Because on this new evidence, Because of this new evidence, we now know that all juveniles will reach the desistance threshold within 3 years of adjudication or release. This is due to the fact that at the time of adjudication, the juvenile recidivism rate is only 2.75%. And risk reduces by 12% for every year offense-free in the community. Therefore, all juveniles who live offense-free for 3 years after adjudication and release will be no more dangerous than anyone else. But even those juvenile adjudicants who do commit a subsequent non-sexual crime only delay reaching desistance by 3.3 years. However, their risk still declines, and they will still eventually become no more dangerous than anyone else in the community. The commission of technical offenses, like failure to register, or the commission of disorderly persons or petty disorderly persons offenses do not delay reaching the desistance threshold. For example, J.A. committed two subsequent offenses. That delayed him reaching the desistance threshold, but now, as Dr. Nover testified, J.A.'s recidivism risk is approaching zero. He is less likely to commit a sexual offense than a member of the general public. In the case of T.L., who committed a petty disorderly person's offense using offensive language, his progress toward the desistance threshold was not delayed by this offense. He reached the desistance threshold 3 years after his adjudication. In CK, this court found that the presumption underlying the lifetime bar imposed by subsection G was that certain juvenile sex offenders were irredeemable. The CK court found that presumption to be false. The same presumption is equally false for subsection F. Redemption is possible for juveniles adjudicated delinquent for a sexual offense because risk declines and rehabilitation is nearly universal. That's the end of my opening statement. I'd be happy to entertain any questions.
Counsel, you're asking in essence for a finding that the lifetime registration scheme set forth under F is not reasonably related to a legitimate government purpose for a 17-year-old who then goes on to commit another offense. Would that same logic extend to an 18-year-old?
The guiding principle in any answer I would give about any time bar is that at the point where the time bar ceases to have a rational relationship to public safety pursuant to the Greenberg analysis, that it's no longer constitutional.
So if there were studies of young adults, sociological, scientific evidence with respect to the rate of reoffense along the lines of what you've just said, the argument would then provide a constitutional challenge to adults.
It would. Certainly.
You're asking us to overrule a significant part of Doe versus Poritz, are you not?
No, because Doe versus Poritz was predicated on the entire premise of public safety. Doe versus Poritz articulated that that Megan's Law was intended by the legislature to protect the public from dangerous sex offenders. And at the point where, and Doe v. Poritz made an explicit attempt to distinguish and differentiate non-dangerous from more dangerous sex offenders, and in fact indicated that once a person ceases to pose a risk to the public, they shouldn't be disturbed any more than anyone.
But Doe versus Poritz found constitutional the lifetime ban, the lifetime registration requirement. Correct?
Doe v. Poritz found constitutional the imposition of a lifetime scheme, that Megan's Law, that could then be challenged based on a safety ascertainment.
So, all right. So then, should we assume for purposes of your argument that every aspect of Doe versus Poritz in terms of the constitutionality of the statute, you're not challenging? that's our starting point is Doe versus Poritz.
Well, Doe versus Poritz, and I think the legislative statement as well, if I may read that very briefly, the legislature finds and declares day. The danger of recidivism posed by sex offenders and offenders who commit other predatory acts against children, and the dangers posed by persons who prey on others as a result of mental illness, require a system of registration that will permit law enforcement officials to identify and alert the public when necessary for the public safety.
That's it. I understand. I want you to go ahead with that argument, but I want to ask you about, we're here on a constitutional issue in this case. And it seems to me that you are making arguments that the legislature's determination and then the constitutional determination made by the court in Doe versus Poritz was predicated on a lack of understanding that science has now corrected.
Well, actually, okay, so my response to that is no, the entirety of the Megan's Law scheme and the general holdings in Doe v. Poritz and the legislative intent were all to protect society. What they have lacked was some of the tools to assess risk. And so what's faulty now, constitutionally faulty at this point, are some of the proxies, the artificial proxies they put into place because they didn't have the tools to assess risk.
Argument to be made to the legislature that they were passing a law based on science that has now been evolved, and they should amend the law so that it comports with current science.
It certainly is an argument that could be made to the legislature. The legislature could decide to take it up by themselves. Someone could suggest it, but none of that has any certainty of action in the legislature, which is motivated by other things than a judicial review. A judicial review, which is what we're doing here, has a different set of priorities and requirements. And a judicial review requires the court to determine the constitutionality of a provision.
But when you say to us that that Doe versus Poritz was reliant on proxies, and I assume you're talking about bans, about
proxies, for example, the 15-year time bar is one of those proxies.
The lifetime registration requirement; these were proxies for science. So what I think you're telling us is that we should revisit aspects of Doe because they were not sufficiently grounded in science.
Just
a yes or no. Is that what you're asking?
Well, Doe is not saying that. Doe didn't set up those proxies.
No, the legislature set up the
proxies. Yeah, the legislature set up. Doe just said, we have a danger here. It's okay to do something about it. We're going to use the best tools we have. And let's put something in place, all based on the safety of the public.
Doe found those, what you're calling proxies, to be constitutional.
The proxies, termination was never before the court in Doe, for example. Doe was heard at a time before any termination issues were relevant.
We're talking about the 15-year time bar. Mm-hmm. Was found constitutional in Doe, correct?
Well, Doe also said, and this I think goes to the heart of the question, legislatures get to respond to problems with the best tools they have available. So Doe explicitly acknowledged that the finding of constitutionality with what the legislature was doing, and subsequently with guidelines and so on, was based on the premise that it was the best option available to accomplish the legitimate state interest of protecting the public from dangerous sex offenders.
So now you're telling us there are better tools and there's better science, and that the constitutional inquiry should come out differently than it did in Doe. I'm simply asking you, are you asking us to revisit Doe, any aspect of Doe, or should we assume that your analysis proceeds on the premise that Doe versus Poritz remains the law.
Well, I desperately want to give you a yes or no answer. So it's not that. It's just that I think that Doe is actually saying something a little different, which is Doe is not saying Megan's law is constitutional and that's the end of the inquiry. Doe is saying Megan's law and components of Megan's law are constitutional only in so long as they are legitimate tools to respond to the protecting the public from dangerous sex offenders. So
where
I
is
think
that in Doe?
Perhaps it would be more satisfying if I said, I think from a substantive due process standpoint, not from a statutory construction standpoint, but from my standpoint, from substantive due process, procedural due process, and equal protection, any aspect of Megan's law that does not pass the Greenberg test for a relationship between the infringements on the rights and liberties that it infringes on and the public purpose that is adequate. If there's not a real and substantial correlation there and it doesn't pass the Greenberg test, it's unconstitutional.
And that applies to adults as well. I know we're here on a...
Yes, it does. Now, let's just be
out in the open.
I want it to be out in the open because I'm frankly kind of tired of everybody thinking that this is a stepping stone to get to somewhere else. This is not a stepping stone. The juvenile issues we're raising here is not a stepping stone to get to adult matters. They're all simply the result of a consistent constitutional analysis. And they have the same outcome where they share characteristics of artificial time bars.
Stepping stone. The argument you're making, and I'm read your brief, the argument you're making could apply to adults as well as children, could it not?
I say it does. I say it absolutely does. And I say that actually the one-stop shopping that this court could do is to find that artificial antiquated time bars that do not in fact pass the Greenberg test and are not rationally related to the protection of the public from sex offense recidivism should in fact all be invalidated and replaced with the much better tools that would much better protect the public and that would actually be constitutional to the registrants who are subject to them.
That's helpful.
You just talked
Thank
about,
you.
I'm sorry, a consistent constitutional analysis. It seems like your consistent constitutional analysis is that the court has to constantly be reviewing laws enacted by the legislature to say, we don't think that this comports with the best science anymore. And therefore we're going to deem it unconstitutional because the science has changed. The legislature hasn't made the decision to change the law. Therefore all laws where it no longer comports with the best science available, we're just going to strike them down.
I couldn't agree more. That is the way the courts do and should work. That is exactly what is authorized by many cases. When changed factual circumstances occur, then new analysis is appropriate and laws can and should be revisited and reviewed for constitutionality under the new factual circumstances.
So what Landis type of case says that?
I'm sorry?
What type of case says that? That when the law no longer comports with the best science, it is automatically struck down?
There are a number. I do have it in my many notes and in my briefcase right here. It's in our briefing. And so it's, I'm just going blank on the case that we cited, but there,
you can tell us in rebuttal.
Yeah. One case is CK actually. CK actually does say that changed factual circumstances that justify review, constitutional review, or change factual circumstances are appropriate to reanalyze and potentially revise the constitutional determinations of a court related to the same law or the same subject matter. So CK, it's right in CK.
Let's see if for argument's sake that we accept.
And that's what CK did. That's exactly what CK did. Sorry.
Let's say, for argument's sake, we accept that premise. Where is the science in this case applicable to New Jersey specifically regarding recidivism rates?
When
not,
you
not
say
generally, specifically to New Jersey and how it would impact New Jersey residents.
By New Jersey, do you mean studies that were just done specifically in New Jersey, or that the science would apply to New Jersey individuals?
I think either, but more specifically, okay. in the context of, we heard earlier today what amount of individuals are registered in New Jersey at certain sure. ages. So I think it would be important to know that information to get to that, to reach the conclusion you're asking us to reach.
Undoubtedly. So the science that we're referring to, the body of science we're referring to, is 30 years, hundreds, if not thousands of studies, massive amounts of studied individuals, individual studies sometimes going to 30,000 individuals studied at a time. The science is so robust, so massive, it's absolutely uncontrovertible. There is absolute agreement in the relevant professional community. There is no question that those dynamics tested by the same tools that they test someone in New Jersey on, for example, they've developed the actuarial assessment tools for risk. And so those tools, based on the data and the understandings created by a very large body of scientific study and the resulting data, have produced scientific actuarial tools that can assess any individual on this planet in the same way and come up with a risk outcome.
If that very startling statement that you just made about the state of the science is true, why hasn't anybody gone to the legislature and said, you have Megan's Law in place for 3 years and it science has definitively proven with hundreds and thousands of studies that it is based on a totally false premise?
Yeah, I testified before the legislature once about, I don't know, a decade ago. And the fact of the matter is, I think that it seems to be, the way I've heard it put, is sex offense, and doing anything that can be seen to be positive for sex offenders is the third rail, and they don't want to touch it. And it, you know, the legislature has a different mandate. It's a political body, and they operate.
The legislature has a mandate in the Constitution to create policy. That's not this court's role. It is a constitutional separation of powers principle that it is their job to create policy. So you're coming to us and saying the legislature, third rail, they're not the people to go to. You're coming to us and saying this, that all of this, the legislature's entire policy determination here is premised on a falsehood that science has now disproven. And you're saying to us, and I appreciate your clarity that we're here on a juvenile, but your argument applies squarely to every single sex offender, adult or juvenile, in the state. The whole Megan's Law scheme should be undone.
But that's not true. I never said the whole Megan's Law scheme should be done undone. I said very specific individual components of Megan's Law, such as the artificial time bars, whether it's 15 or life, and the way that their RRAS functions, those are the things. Megan's Law can stay in place. In fact, Megan's Law, I'm not advocating for the elimination of Megan's Law. Megan's Law would be dramatically improved and the public much better served by a better functioning Megan's Law, where the actual registry process works to inform people about who's dangerous and who's not.
Mr. Maynard, so, is there a distinction to be drawn between a second offense that is not a sexual offense as opposed to one that is a sexual offense?
Absolutely, yes, of course. When there's a second or subsequent offense or offenses that are of a sexual nature, that's a whole different ball of wax. That's a whole different situation. And then what you would have is those same actuarial tools would have a whole different outcome of a much greater risk outcome when they're tested. And any judge conducting any subsection F safety bar analysis would certainly see that. A person committing a subsequent sex offense is not at all what we're talking about when we're talking about the vast majority of people who do not commit subsequent sexual offenses. So yes, the answer is it's
a so-called artificial time bar that is limited to sex offenses unconstitutional.
An artificial time bar that's limited, an artificial time bar that does not, again, pass the proper constitutional analysis related to satisfying or being needed for a legitimate public need is unconstitutional. And if I might respond to something you said earlier that I don't want to forget, I'm glad you brought up the issue of separation of powers, because as much as people talk about referring things to the legislature, the courts cannot defer assessing and ruling on the constitutionality of a provision where a proper challenge has been made.
No, I'm not suggesting any such thing. But in discussing a legislature, you talked about going to the legislature, and apparently have made a determination that it's not successful because it's the third rail.
Well, it wasn't successful. Nothing has been successful in any reform of Megan's Law. Only in the attempt to harshen or provide more restrictions has occurred. But if I might finish that, the separation of powers requires, since Marbury versus Madison, that judicial review occur on the basis of challenges brought to the court. And if the court refers or defers to the legislature in such a manner as not to undertake that judicial review at the time and in the way that a proper challenge is made to respond to that challenge, then it blurs the distinction of the separation of powers, because the judiciary actually kind of becomes subsumed by the legislature.
But Marbury versus Madison never held that all laws have to be supported by the best science. And as soon as they're no longer supported by the best science, a court must strike them down.
No, Marbury versus
with where that proposition comes from.
That all laws have to be supported by the best science?
Correct.
Okay, so that's not what I'm saying. I'm not saying all laws have to be supported by the best science. I'm saying that there has to be a proper rational relationship when there's an infringement on rights and liberties.
What is the fundamental right that this is infringing?
Well, CK found that Article 1, Paragraph 1 of the Constitution, the entire rights and liberties under Article 1, Paragraph 1 were infringed by Megan's Law, even a person who is a Tier 1 on Megan's Law.
What specific fundamental right that's set forth in Article 1, Paragraph 1?
Sure. Well, here is a short rendition of some of the harms that even a Tier 1 registrant in our state is subjected to when traveling interstate or moving to obtaining a job or in another state will expose a New Jersey registrant to internet registry, residency restrictions, proximity restrictions, in-person registration.
Sorry, you mean in a different state, not in New Jersey?
Yes, by virtue of being a registrant in New Jersey, these are harms. They're prevented from going to other jurisdictions or other states without subjecting themselves to all of these things.
Isn't that because other jurisdictions have laws that their courts have upheld as constitutional regarding registration requirements?
Of course, but the fact that those laws are triggered is because they're a New Jersey Megan's Law registrant.
So what fundamental right is that?
The fundamental rights? Well, as Article 1, Paragraph 1 of the New Jersey Constitution said, and as was found in CK, you have the right to the pursuit of happiness, the attaining and defense of property. I would suggest that, and CK suggested, that once you're labeled a social pariah, I'll just read what CK said. Subsection G, as applied to juveniles, arbitrarily denies those individuals their right to liberty and enjoyment of happiness guaranteed by Article 1, Paragraph 1 of the New Jersey Constitution. That's CK at page 76. Saying that it labels Megan's Law registrants as social pariahs, interferes with gaining employment opportunities, interferes with finding acceptance in his community, interferes with developing a healthy sense of self-worth and forming personal relationships. That's directly from CK. And those are the real impacts of even a tier one Megan's Law registrant and many, many more. Not to mention international Megan's Law is applied to a New Jersey Megan's Law registrant, an inability to enter certain countries, federal SORNA is applied, and barriers to obtaining housing, especially rental units, employment, and education. So there is a plethora.
So you're disagreeing with the holding in Doe that the challenge provisions do not constitute punishment?
No, I'm not. I'm not disagreeing with that at all. Actually, I'm saying that Doe said very, very clearly that if there is a legitimate need, a legitimate state interest that is being satisfied with the best, most narrow means possible that we have, those infringements are to be tolerated. They're constitutional, but those harms do exist. So it's important to understand, yes, there is harm to being on Megan's Law, even a tier one. Doe v. Porth said, we've got a serious problem. We're gonna do something about it. And as long as we do it in a way that passes constitutional analysis, we get to do that. Even if it's imperfect, even if it infringes terribly on somebody's rights and interests. But Doe also said that at a point where a person ceases to present any more risk to the public than their neighbors, than anyone else in the neighborhood, then they must not have those infringements further. So Doe said you can only infringe on someone's rights and liberties when there is an adequate relationship to the need to protect the public. When that adequate relationship ceases, then any further infringements on rights and liberties, especially by artificial time bars and things like that, cease to be constitutional.